14th principle. Life and liberty are secure only so long as the right of property is secure. Under English common law, a most unique significance was attached to the unalienable right of possessing, developing, and disposing of property. Land and the products of the earth were considered a gift of God, which were to be cultivated, beautified, and brought under dominion. As the psalmist had written, quote, "Even the heavens are the Lord's, but the earth hath he given to the children of men." End of quote. Mankind given the earth in common. John Locke pointed out that the human family originally received the planet Earth as a common gift, and that mankind was given the capacity and responsibility to improve it. Said he, quote, "God, who hath given the world to men in common, hath also given them reason to make use of it to the best advantage of life and convenience." End of quote. Development of the earth mostly by private endeavor. Then Locke pointed out that man received the commandment from his Creator to subdue the earth and have dominion over it. But because dominion means control, and control requires exclusiveness, private rights in property became an inescapable necessity or an inherent aspect of subduing the earth and bringing it under dominion. It is obvious that if there were no such thing as ownership in property, which means legally protected exclusiveness, there would be no subduing or extensive development of the resources of the earth. Without private rights in developed or improved property, it would be perfectly lawful for a lazy, covetous neighbor to move in as soon as the improvements were completed and take possession of the fruits of his industrious neighbor. And even the covetous neighbor would not be secure because someone stronger than he could take it away from him. Without property rights, four things would occur. Note that if property rights did not exist, four things would occur which would completely frustrate the Creator's command to multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and bring it under dominion. 1. One experience like the above would tend to completely destroy the incentive of an industrious person to develop and improve any more property. 2. The industrious individual would also be deprived of the fruits of his labor. 3. Marauding bands would even be tempted to go about the country confiscating by force and violence the good things which others had frugally and painstakingly provided. 4. Mankind would be impelled to remain on a bare subsistence level of hand-to-mouth survival, because the accumulation of anything would invite attack. A person's property is a projection of life itself. Another interesting point made by Locke is the fact that all property is an extension of a person's life, energy, and ingenuity. Therefore, to destroy or confiscate such property is, in reality, an attack on the essence of life itself. The person who has worked to cultivate a farm, obtained food by hunting, carved a beautiful statue, or secured a wage by his labor, has projected his very being, the very essence of his life, into that labor. This is why Locke maintained that a threat to that property is a threat to the essence of life itself. Here is his reasoning. Quote, "Though the earth and all inferior creatures be common as the gift from God to all men, yet every man has a property in his own person. This nobody has any right to but himself. The labor of his body and the work of his hands, we may say, are properly his. Whatsoever, then, he removes out of the state that nature hath provided and left it in, he hath mixed his labor with it, and join to it something that is his own, and thereby makes it his property. He that is nourished by the acorns he picked up under an oak, or the apples he gathered from the trees in the wood, has certainly appropriated them to himself. Nobody can deny, but the nourishment is his. I ask then, when did they begin to be his? When he digested, or when he ate, or when he boiled, or when he brought them home, or when he picked them up? And it is plain, if the first gathering made them not his, nothing else could. End of quote. How is ownership acquired? Locke then deals with a very important question. If all things were originally enjoyed in common with the rest of humanity, would a person not have to get the consent of every other person on earth before he could call certain things his own? Locke answers by saying, quote, that labor added something to them, the acorns or apples, more than nature, the common mother of all, had done, and so they become his private right. And will anyone say he had no right to those acorns or apples he thus appropriated, because he had not the consent of all mankind to make them his? If such a consent as that was necessary, the man would have starved, notwithstanding the plenty God had given him. It is the taking any part of what is common and removing it out of the state nature leaves it in, which begins the property, without which the common gift from God is of no use. Thus, the law of reason makes the deer that property of the Indian who hath killed it. It is allowed to be his goods who hath bestowed his labor upon it, though before it was the common right of everyone. End of quote. Property rights sacred? It is important to recognize that the common law does not make property sacred, but only the right which someone has acquired in that property. Justice George Sutherland of the U.S. Supreme Court once told the New York State Bar Association, quote, it is not the right of property which is protected, but the right to property. Property per se has no rights, but the individual, the man, has three great rights equally sacred from arbitrary interference: the right to his life, the right to his liberty, the right to his property. The three rights are so bound together as to be essentially one right. To give a man his life but deny him his liberty is to take from him all that makes his life worth living. To give him his liberty but take from him the property which is the fruit and badge of his liberty is to still leave him a slave. End of quote. In this same spirit, Abraham Lincoln once said, quote, property is the fruit of labor. Property is desirable, is a positive good in the world. That some should be rich shows that others may become rich, and hence is just encouragement to industry and enterprise. Let not him who is houseless pull down the house of another, but let him work diligently to build one for himself, thus by example assuring that his own shall be safe from violence. I take it that it is the best for all to leave each man free to acquire property as fast as he can. Some will get wealthy. I don't believe in a law to prevent a man from getting rich. It would do more harm than good. End of quote. Primary purpose of government is to protect property. The early American colonists had much to say about property and property rights because it was a critical issue leading to the Revolutionary War. the effort of the crown to take their property through various kinds of taxation without their consent, either individually or through their representatives, was denounced as a violation of the English Constitution and English common law. They often quoted John Locke, who had said, quote, "The supreme power cannot take from any man any part of his property without his consent. For the preservation of property being the end of government, and that for which men enter into society, it necessarily supposes and requires that the people should have property, without which they must be supposed to lose that property by entering into society, which was the end for which they entered into it." End of quote. Property rights essential to liberty. John Adams saw private property as the most important single foundation stone undergirding human liberty and human happiness. He said, quote, "The moment the idea is admitted into society that property is not as sacred as the laws of God, and that there is not a force of law and public justice to protect it, anarchy and tyranny commence. Property must be secured or liberty cannot exist." End of quote. Should government take from the haves and give to the have-nots? As we have pointed out earlier, one of the worst sins of government, according to the founders, was the exercise of its coercive taxing powers to take property from one group and give it to another. In our own day, when the government has imposed a multi-hundred-billion-dollar budget on the American people, with about one-half being transfer payments from the tax-paying public to the wards of the government, the following words of James Madison may sound strange. Quote, "Government is instituted to protect property of every sort. This being the end of government, that alone is not a just government, nor is property secure under it, where the property which a man has in his personal safety and personal liberty is violated by arbitrary seizures of one class of citizens for the service of the rest." End of quote. Redistribution of the wealth, unconstitutional. In earlier years, the American courts held that the expropriating of property to transfer to other citizens was unlawful, being completely outside the constitutional power delegated to the government. It was not until 1936, in the Butler case, that the Supreme Court began arbitrarily distorting the meaning of the General Welfare Clause to permit the distribution of federal bounties as a demonstration of concern for the poor and the needy. Before that time, this practice was prohibited. The Supreme Court had declared, quote, "No man would become a member of a community in which he could not enjoy the fruits of his honest labor and industry." The preservation of property, then, is a primary object of the social compact. The legislature, therefore, had no authority to make an act divesting one citizen of his freehold and vesting it in another without a just compensation. It is inconsistent with the principles of reason, justice, and moral rectitude. It is incompatible with the comfort, peace, and happiness of mankind. It is contrary to the principles of social alliance in every free government. And lastly, it is contrary to the letter and spirit of the Constitution. End of quote. Property rights, the foundation of all civilizations. One of the world's foremost economists, Dr. Ludwig von Mises, pointed out that the preservation of private property has tremendous social implications as well as legal ramifications. He wrote, quote, "If history could prove and teach us anything, it would be the private ownership of the means of production as a necessary requisite of civilization and material well-being. All civilizations have up to now been based on private property. Only nations committed to the principle of private property have risen above penury and produced science, art, and literature. There is no experience to show that any other social system could provide mankind with any of the achievements of civilization. End of quote. Caring for the poor without violating property rights. But, of course, the nagging question still remains. If it corrupts a society for the government to take care of the poor by violating the principle of property rights, who will take care of the poor? The answer of those who built America seems to be anybody but the federal government. Americans have never tolerated the suffering and starvation which have plagued the rest of the world, but until the present generation, help was given almost exclusively by the private sector or on the community or state level. President Grover Cleveland vetoed legislation in his day designed to spend federal taxes for private welfare problems. He wrote, quote, "I can find no warrant for such an appropriation in the Constitution, and I do not believe that the power and duty of the general government ought to be extended to the relief of individual suffering, which is in no manner properly related to the public service or benefit." A prevalent tendency to disregard the limited mission of this power and duty should, I think, be steadfastly resisted, to the end that the lesson should be constantly enforced that, though the people support the government should not support the people. The friendliness and charity of our countrymen can always be relied upon to relieve their fellow citizens in misfortune. This has been repeatedly and quite lately demonstrated. Federal aid in such cases encourages the expectation of paternal care on the part of the government and weakens the sturdiness of our national character, while it prevents the indulgence among our people of that kindly sentiment and conduct which strengthens the bonds of a common brotherhood. End of quote.